Welcome to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin, in St. Louis, Missouri. And on the other side of the line, we have Tony Clark, my co-host. And I think you're in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania this week?
Yeah, I'm in Harrisburg right now. Bought a whole damn new house in Philadelphia, and I don't even get to sleep in it. Right now, I'm back in Harrisburg working where my job is stationed. So I'm doing a little back and forth commute, but... Yeah, man. Life is great. Glad to do a podcast with you again. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm very happy after the result that we just had on Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And, well, just in general, the form that we've been in over the past 2 weeks and even going past. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, we're in a Champions League place in the middle of April. Who would have thought that?
Yeah, I mean, it's unreal. Not only is the form good, but we're in a strong position and... I know we'll get into it later, but what I'm excited about this Champions League position, I should say, is it's in our hands. It's not like we're ahead, but like two games ahead and a tough schedule. We have a fairly decent schedule, and we're in a position where the people behind us don't have any extra games in hand other than Everton, who can't catch us with those games in hand. So the ball's in our court to make things happen.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, I don't even know what to say. I've been so speechless with where we're at, and we all know where I predicted us to finish at the beginning of the season, and I think most people be familiar with where you predicted us to finish in the season in the top 10, but I mean, we're shooting way above that. Just to fill you guys in, since our last podcast, which was just under a month ago, the last results that we've had was that 3-3 against Arsenal, that gut-wrenching game against Arsenal. I can't think of a game where we've drawn, where I've been that gutted after playing so well and after taking the lead. I was just disgusted after that game. And then the 3-2 win against Wolves and the 3-2 win that we just had against Leicester. So it's... And I wanted to research this stat, and I can't figure out where the best place to do that was, but I wanted to see when the last time, if ever, because it wouldn't shock me if it's never happened before, but when the last time West Ham United have had 3-0 leads in three consecutive games. I just can't imagine that it's happened too many times, and I haven't been able to find an answer to that. So if you know the answer, please tweet us at West Ham Way US Pod. But I am genuinely curious if ever when the last time that happened, because I would venture to say it's only happened, if it ever has, once or twice tops.
I'm going to research it. I have an idea how I can manually do it in Excel. I think I'm going to give it a shot. Maybe not tonight because I'm tired, but maybe this week before the next podcast if nobody else beats me to it. But I was going to say, yeah, I think it's crazy how we haven't done a pod in about a month. I thought we were being pretty bad again. But at the same time, thank goodness for that international break. It feels like we haven't done a pod in 3 months, and it's actually we've only missed two games, which was the Wolves game, and then obviously we'll talk about the game this weekend. So we're in pretty good shape. We're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, for sure. It's I think we're the only team in the world where you can be up by 3-0 and still have the fans like not being able to watch the game, because we're not certain that we're going to come away with a win. Like, it's just insane the way that we've handled these 3-goal leads in three consecutive weeks. I mean, the last three games all have been just miserable to watch in the second half, for me anyway. And not that like it wasn't exciting, because to the neutral, obviously, it's a really exciting game. But my heart is just in my stomach with the way that we've gone 3 goals up and almost had the lead taken from us 3 times.
Well, I was mad because I messaged Andy, only at West Ham am I shooting bricks, still up 2 with 4 to go. And he said, so are we. And I said, especially with that cunt Mike Dean in the middle. And and guess what? Not even 30 seconds later is when they scored that goal right before stoppage time. And I was just sick to my stomach. I was like, of course they did. I literally knew it. Maybe it's because I said it and jinxed it. But I'll tell you what, man, it just drives me insane. I just don't understand.
Well, what do you think the problem is?
Somebody in the group chat the other day said that we're not used to winning or something like that, or Or so maybe like their mentality just lets off up 3-0 because they're doing great scoring goals. Like you said, three games in a row, we're up 3-0 at half. And who would have thought scoring three, going up 3-0 for three games, and we come away with a goal differential plus two.
Yeah, I mean, when it could have been +9, and then we would have the best goal difference of the pack that is all chasing that fourth spot. Yeah.
So I mean, I find it very frustrating, and they are the team, and I feel like this happens a lot with West Ham in general. You know, we are fine until we concede, and then all hell breaks out loose. I went on this whole big tangent after the Arsenal game when I was comparing it to the Man United game when we played Manchester United so well, up 1-0, they scored one goal, and next thing you know, we're down 3-1. I mean, they take one punch to the mouth and they just fall apart. Where, you know, we're doing well scoring goals, but that defense, once it falters one time, it just explodes.
Yeah, I it's hard to pinpoint exactly what I think the issue is, but it seems like we don't love when teams go all out attack against us and then we go into the shell. It's weird because you would think the way we counter attack, we would thrive off of teams pushing 8, 9, 10 guys up the field and trying to go all out attack. But it's like we get scared and then we just play really, really defensively and we're scared to make a pass. It's just bizarre the way that we can go three goals up and then next thing you know, it's 3-1, it's 3-2, and then in some cases it's 3-3. I don't know if it's a Moyes thing. I don't know if it's a squad depth thing. I really don't. But I think a major issue that we have is obviously squad depth is not deep, and especially in positions where you would want to bring on some reinforcements and hold out a win. Because in the past, before Rice was injured, it would be Noble coming on. But then when Noble, Rice, and Souček are in the team, like I've said before, nothing gets going forward. It's just bizarre. And I can't really wrap my brain around as to why it happens. But, hey, when you score three goals, I mean, most of the games you're going to win. And we've done two out of three, so I'll take three-goal leads and winning 3-2 every day of the week.
I mean, I would take that too. I guess what concerns me, though, is when we don't score those three goals, are we going to be organized? I don't know what it's like. I mean, it's been three games now that we've scored three goals in the first half. I really don't know what to say. I really know this makes bad podcasting. I really am so astonished by what is going on this season in general that it's very hard for me to make a prediction on what's going on because this is all foreign to me as a West Ham supporter. Like, I wasn't born, or maybe I was born. I forget what year it was. I mean, was it in the 80s or 90s when we finished third?
Yeah, I think that was – I couldn't tell you exact year. I can look it up, but I believe it was in the mid-80s.
Right, and I'm going to get some old head being like, well, are you a real fan for not knowing that? But I don't remember what year it was. But long story short, you know, in the 80s or 90s.
85, 86, mid-80s.
Thank you so much. Okay, so mid-80s, perfect. You know, since then, the highest position I think I ever saw West Ham in my time supporting was 7th when we had that Piatt season. Was that 7th?
Yes, I believe it was 7th, yeah.
Other than that, I've all had mid-table and relegation battles.
For sure.
So yeah. This is whole new territory. This feels weird. And I was texting my buddy Clay, who's a Chelsea fan, one of my best pals, and I'm like, how do you deal with this every year? When this is your expectation, like, I'm scared watching these games sick because I'm so excited and I want top four. Like, we're in a good position to get it. I'm like, how do you have to deal with this bullshit every year of being stressed?
It's more stressful in a relegation battle, though, I will say. So stress is something that we are used to. It's a totally different stress. It's a nice stress to have.
Well, see, here's the thing. I half disagree with that because at the end of the day, I mean, we did have some stressful times the last few years. But at the end of the day, typically we've been pulling it out where, like, the last 3 or 4 weeks we're like, okay, we're cool. Like, oh, we're mathematically safe. You know, this we are in a real chance for this to come down to the final games of the season.
Oh, yeah,
And
I'm certain it will. Yeah, unless we do something catastrophically bad.
or injuries. But this is why I was saying is like I couldn't imagine a team like Chelsea or supporting a team like Liverpool or a team like Manchester United or Arsenal or Spurs where like your financial plans for the next 3 years all depend on you getting top four. So that's the major difference. You know, this could be massive for West Ham. You know, imagine if we get this and we do improve and I guess I'm crossing my fingers that David Gold and David Sullivan actually do something right with the recruitment and spend some money to bolster this team and provide depth for the Champions League and/or Europa League. But this is a real opportunity for us to push forward
You know,
as a club.
I totally agree, and it's a chance for the owners to actually deliver on one of the promises. I don't say promise. I don't think they promised Champions League within the first 5 years, but it was mentioned that that was a goal of theirs was to be in the Champions League within 5 years of moving to the stadium, and this would accomplish that if it does happen. Now, I will say I'm going to be happy if we finish Europa or Champions League. Obviously, you'd rather be in the Champions League than the Europa League, but I will take any European competition at this point. And I would love to just have European away days next season that we could potentially go to. I think that would be terrific and a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, you and me flying over to like Krakow, Poland, or something crazy like that
Yeah.
for like some Europa
I would
League
just
match.
I
I'm
would
down for
love to
that.
go I would love to go to some random European country. I'd love to go to a major European country. I don't care where it is in Europe. I would love to go with all of you guys. I think it's just going to be even if we stink it up and lose 7-0, I think it would just be an absolutely amazing trip.
I'm just picturing like a night out in Turin, going to Juventus away on
Oh.
like a Tuesday night.
Yeah,
Oh.
I would love to like go to Milan or Barcelona or Madrid or Munich or I mean I don't care where it is. I would just love
Prague.
to see West Ham in a European competition. I know we were in the Europa League twice, but getting bounced in the qualification stage doesn't exactly feel like a an accomplishment of any sort.
No, absolutely not.
And
It's
do so
good.
I don't know if you know this, and again we this is new territory for us. I never pay attention to the Champions League or the Europa League for the most part, but if we finish fourth, do we have to go through qualifiers to get into the Champions League?
No, they changed it from my understanding. And this is where, I mean, I could be talking shit, but from my understanding, the top four teams automatically make the group stage now. It used to be the fourth team did the playoff round, but I believe it's all four teams now make the group stage if you have the top five UEFA coefficients or whatever it is. So England should have four teams in the group stage. Now, I do not know if that changes if there's a fifth English team for winning the Champions League or Europa League. And then there can only be five. So, again, if the four English teams, and then I'm assuming if an English team wins the Champions League, but then someone wins the Europa League, I think we get jammed up and could miss out or something like that. I don't know.
You are right. I just Googled it, and in 2018 they changed that rule to where fourth place does go straight into the qual or the group stages, which is
Yes.
terrific.
Okay.
Yeah, which
Yeah.
is would
Yeah.
be terrific.
So that would
Because
guarantee us three away games in Europe, which would be amazing.
God knows we would most certainly blow it against some Polish team that we've never heard of and in getting into the Champions League, and we would certainly get knocked out. So that's
Yeah,
good. That's
100,
good news.
100%.
And if you finish third in your group, in the Champions League, you go back into the Europa, right?
Yes.
So that
So the
we have something to fall back on. Worst case scenario. Well, I guess that's not worst case. Worst case, we could finish fourth. But
Yeah, which we could easily.
and we
But
are
no,
getting
it's.
ahead of ourselves here. I am
I
getting
know,
ahead of
I know.
myself
But
by talking about this.
it's fun to be able to get ahead of yourself, you know? Like, this is exciting. These are exciting times for us to sit on this podcast on a Tuesday afternoon, or Tuesday evening, I should say. And maybe next year, on Tuesday, April 19th, We're talking about West Ham in the quarterfinals. Who knows? I'm
Who
just joking.
knows?
But it's exciting to even picture it, and I'm trying to enjoy the moment. Liam in our other group chat got mad at me and because I was a little pissy about us blowing 3-0 leads 3 games in a row. And I was pretty upset about it. He was like, "Yeah, but you need to enjoy the moment. Who would have thought we would have taken 7 points off of these 3 games and be in this position? Let's try to enjoy it." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right. Let me relax a little bit."
Yeah,
So
outside of the, I mean, this isn't necessarily relevant to what you were saying, but outside of the traditional big six, we have lost one game this season. That is insane. And that was our worst result of the season against Newcastle. That was the worst. I mean, that's when we all thought we were going down for sure.
But that's, and this is what I've always said, is if you handle your games
Yeah, finally
against
beating
the,
teams we should beat.
if you beat teams you should beat, in theory, and handle your games on teams that are outside the quote-unquote big six and nick a few results there, you can have a very successful season. It's the games. I remember going up to New York City and hanging out with the NYC Hammers at Smithfield. And going up there to watch us get smashed up 2-0 to Cardiff. I think that was like 2 years ago, maybe,
Yeah,
or
horrible, horrible
maybe.
game. That was one of the, I think that was last season. No, the Cardiff weren't up last season. You're right, 2 seasons ago. You're absolutely right.
That was probably one of the worst games I ever watched. It was so dull, boring,
Yep.
disgusting, like horrible. I was
I
mad
think our
'cause I went
friend,
up.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think our friend
Yeah.
Scott Davis was at that game, I believe.
Yeah, I think he was too. But it was along the lines of, those are the games where we would lose, and you're like, dude, what the fuck? Or, but this season, it feels like we're winning the games, even if it's a terrible performance. We're taking points and winning games in ones we should. And that's how you get to top four. That's how you get to top six. That's how you get to top seven,
Yeah.
is you beat the teams you should, and you nick a few results on teams you quote unquote should not win.
And what's wild is I would venture to bet, again, I haven't researched this, so if I'm wrong, please correct me. But I would venture to say in previous seasons, we'd probably taken more points off of the big six, the quote unquote big six. And 'cause this year we really haven't been beating many of them. But we've been playing solid and not getting tonked. But usually, like last season, we beat Chelsea twice. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
like I would venture to say that we've probably fared worse against the big six this year than we have in years past. And but you can see, well, all it takes is for you to beat the teams that you should be beating, and picking up a few surprise results. Like Leicester, I would say, I don't think many people would expect a win from both games against Leicester. Wolves, we hadn't even beaten them once before the last 2 seasons. We've beaten them twice this year. Yeah, it's games like that where usually we're dropping points, and this year clearly, when you have this mentality and you come out of the gates like we've done the past few weeks, all season really, look what can happen. I mean, the sky's the limit, and we're leading the race for top four ahead of Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham, and all the way down in ninth or tenth is Arsenal. I mean, I can't believe that. That's just wild.
This is lazy podcasting because I thought it'd be easier to find, but I feel like it was either 2 years ago or last year or something or another, where we only took like 3 points of off the relegation sides, or only like 2 wins out of six or something stupid like
Yeah.
that. And this season we're handling our business, and it's really, really exciting. And I just think back, and this is me getting really greedy. Okay, I'm gonna get greedy for a second. Think about the points we dropped against Brighton and Palace on those back-to-back games in December,
Yep.
or is it January, whatever. Right there, that could have been 4 more points. What did we add 4 to our 55? And now you're at 59. So, I mean, again, that's
Or
me being it's me being extremely
yeah,
greedy.
or if we don't blow that third goal against Arsenal and we hang on to win that game, you know. Those are the kind of results that I'm going to look back on and think, well, in fact, both Arsenal games, I would say, because we should have beaten them the first time we lost. And then
Yep.
that 3-3 game, those are two results right there. The Newcastle one, if we could get a do-over on that one, I would love. And we're going to get that chance this weekend, actually. 6:30
Yep.
a.m. kickoff over here on Saturday. So it's just you can play the what ifs game, and we really shouldn't because we should be grateful for what we've gotten so far. And you're right, greedy is the word. But there are a few results this season where I look back and be like, man, if we just hung on there, or if we could have just taken care of business there, like the Fulham game earlier, that the draw against Fulham, I think it was nil nil. It was, just again, that's being greedy, but if we could just distance ourselves just a little bit from Chelsea and Liverpool, I'd be feeling a lot more comfortable. But either way, we should be really grateful for where we currently sit right now. Moving on, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but moving on, I did want to address against Wolves. I wanted to mention how amazing Mikel Antonio was in that game, and then him going off injured. And I went on, shout out On the Stoop with Lolo, because I think they do a really good show and it's run really well. I've gone on their show two or three times now, and I went on after the Wolves game, and I said on this show, when we didn't replace Allaire in January, I said I would bet my house that Mikel Antonio's hamstring gets injured again before the season's over. And what do you know? Mikel Antonio has his best 30 minutes in a West Ham shirt, probably ever, apart from scoring goals. I mean, he did everything else in that game. He did literally everything you could ask for. I thought he was dominant. It was the best I've ever seen him look. And then what do you know? One inconspicuous fall down to the turf, wins the ball back, takes a guy on, tries to shoot, and then his hamstring's done, and he's probably out for the rest of the season. And then we're left with no senior strikers at the club whatsoever. And Antonio's not even a striker himself. I mean, you probably consider him one now, but before the season started, I would not have considered him a striker. And Moyes clearly doesn't rate the Mippo kid. So it's like, I get wanting to have a small squad and it keeps people happy. I get that, but it leaves yourself exposed. But Bowen's come in and done a terrific job. And I mean, we shouldn't really be upset, I guess. I guess Moyes kind of knows what he's doing. But I did want to mention that injury to Antonio. And then obviously, before going into the Wolves game, Declan Rice gets injured on international duty, which is,
Fucking ridiculous.
yeah, I think everyone thought, the thought at least crossed their mind that, well, oh, here we go. Here's the downfall we've all been waiting for. I think us as West
I
Ham
know.
fans, we're all just waiting for this to come crashing down. It's like we're all just sitting here waiting to be woken up from this dream that we've been having. Like, it feels like this isn't real. And that Declan Rice injury seemed like it might have been the start of us waking up and realizing, oh shit, we're back in a relegation battle. You know what I mean? It's just wild.
Yeah, and you talk about this waking up from this dream. I thought that was it, and then here we go scoring three goals on Saturday against or Sunday against Leicester. So,
And Wolves. I mean, that was the Wolves. We won Wolves and Leicester without Rice. Yeah.
So without Rice, the other comment I wanted to make about Antonio being so crucial this season. I said this in a few other podcasts, but I want to bring it back up one more time today. I remember we did a podcast January of last year where we were talking
Sell
about
him.
sell him and who
Ogbonna.
else did I say? Ogbonna. And it's, well, look, we've been playing without Ogbonna as well.
And I can't wait for him to get back. Because I really do think once he comes back into the team, these two goals and three goals we've been shipping, I think that gets turned into one.
And that's the craziest thing about football, and almost what I love about our club is they made me look like an asshole, and I am so glad that they did. Because Antonio has been so crucial to this team, and Ogbonna is arguably up there for Hammer of the Year this year.
Yeah, if he didn't get injured, he definitely would be.
so I mean it's just crazy how those turn of events change.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy how much better Ogbonna makes Dawson look. Because not saying Dawson's been bad, because I really don't think he's been bad. But we have been nowhere near as solid with Diop and Dawson compared to Ogbonna and Dawson. And again, I'm not saying Diop's been bad because he really hasn't been bad. But they're definitely more shaky at the back when
He's not as
Ogbonna's not
crisp.
in there. Exactly. So
Yeah, he's not as crisp.
I think we miss Ogbonna tremendously. And if we get him back, especially with Cresswell now being down injured, I mean, who knows what happens then? Do we go five at the back? I mean, who knows? Who knows what happens
I
there?
think you do. Well, do we have a timeline on Ogbonna?
He could be back this week. They're saying against
I mean,
Newcastle.
I'd argue that we go five in the back, and I yelled at. I said that last week, or 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was on the pod, that I didn't want to go back to five in the back. But I am a big Masuaku fan.
Sure.
I am not a Masuaku fan at four in the back.
Yeah.
So I could see five in the back with Masuaku and Sofal, and then the three of Dawson, Ogbonna, and Diop.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it could work. I mean, that's your option if you do it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really want to see Masuaku by himself, because I think he's a defensive liability. That's just me. I think he's a great player. I think that he is really crafty. I mean, did you see that one point where he dribbled out of three dudes? Like, that
yeah.
was crazy.
He does that stuff all the time. Yeah.
But then and then gets shtick for like one bad giveaway. So
yeah, I mean, like, yeah. It was a bad giveaway that led directly to their goal. But it does seem like Masuaku gets more stick than like your average West Ham player when he makes a mistake. It is kind of bizarre.
I wonder why.
It's kind of bizarre that he does. And Masuaku is a much better, I would agree with that, a much better left wing back than a left back. I like him much better in that position because, as you said, he has a little bit more cover defensively, so it gives him a little bit more freedom to do his thing up the field. And it gives him extra time to get back and cover defensively. So I totally agree with that. But if you go five at the back, then who are you dropping out of Suchek, Noble, Bowen, Lingard, and Fornals? I mean, you got to drop one of them. I wouldn't want to drop.
Why? Did I do my math wrong? Because that's what we lined up with this weekend.
I guess, well, okay, you're right. You're right.
Because you're going to drop Benrahma.
Yeah, well, Masuaku was playing left mid and not left wing back, I think, is what it was. And I was thinking, but all it's just changing his position. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Okay, yeah, sorry. No, yeah, you had me confused. I was like, wait,
yeah,
because
he wasn't
about?
In my head, he wasn't playing wing back over these past couple of games. He's been more pushed up the field.
Right. So if you go five in the back with that group,
yeah, you're right.
And then you said Noble and Suchek. I'm thinking Fornals, and oh my gosh, Bowen up top,
Lingard and Bowen
and Lingard. Yeah. So I think that's a solid lineup. I don't love it. I would like to have an actual striker, and I'd like to see Cresswell. And again, Cresswell is one of those players too that people were like, yeah, he's not good enough. And myself, I'm like, yeah, I think we need a left back. But he's found himself in this center back situation.
Yeah, I totally agree. I guess before, I mean, we don't have to really get into the Leicester game in too much detail, but I just wanted to mention how amazing Jesse Lingard's been. I mean, I don't think we can go much longer without talking about him. I think he's probably been the most informed player in the Premier League since he's came into West Ham.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that we'll probably get more into that when we resurface some of the questions. We're going to repurpose some of the questions from last week in that section because we ended up not doing a pod after the Wolves game. But yeah, I mean, he's been essential. And he's another one of those players where I eat my words. Maybe I'm just a bad football commentator and predictor, because I was like, what do we need Jesse Lingard for? I was like, we need a striker and an outside back, and we got Jesse Lingard. I'm like, yeah, well, what do we need him for? Like, we have outside wingers in Benrahma, Fornals, Bowen, Yarmolenko. We have center mids. Like, what? Where is he going to play?
Yeah. And I thought for certain, because Moyes usually, when he brings in new guys, it takes him, I think this is what I said when we were linked with him, that Moyes just takes like a month or 2 months for you to even get a chance to go in the team. And
Jesse Lingard went right on it.
Straight in. First game he was here, he was straight in the lineup. And so that I did not foresee happening, obviously.
I wonder
what
they knew that we didn't.
Moyes knows him. He trusts him. He's seen what he can do, and he said, "Hey, I know what you got, and I know what you're capable of, and you can come to West Ham, and you can be the man, and we're gonna give you all the freedom you want." He doesn't. I can't even tell you the specific position he plays. He kind of drifts all over the place. Sometimes he's up there, up top on his own, chasing the goalkeeper down, and then other times he's drifting out wide towards the wing, and then other times he's stuck in the middle running through the heart of the defense. I mean, we've given him no leash mm-hmm. at all, and Moyes says, hey, go do your thing. I trust you. And I think that's done Lingard a world of confidence, and you see him now. I see rumors of him being linked to Real Madrid now. I mean, who would have thought that? And that's just crazy. He didn't play 90 minutes of football for almost a year and three quarters before coming to West Ham. He'd been a Europa League substitute and sometimes start, but never finished the game. And now look at him. I mean, if Jesse Lingard, and he's gonna go play at the Euros now. I think Madison's worked his way out of that, and Lingard has definitely worked his way in.
Well, Madison got injured too, unfortunately for him. But
COVID stuff that he just got in trouble for too.
Oh, well, that, yeah. So I have a really hot take. You ready? Really spicy take. The only way we keep Lingard is if we make Champions League. The only way we keep Lingard, because of the way he's played, is if we make the Champions League. And let me tell you why. A, the way that he's played has really attracted some big, big, big teams that are in the Champions League, if those rumors are true. B, financially, the way that he's played, he's earned himself a much bigger price tag. I mean, you're arguably going to try to buy the most informed player in the league right now.
Yeah.
This summer. One of who's since January has been the best player, in my opinion. So the only way I think that we can keep him is Champions League with the ambitions and being able to pay for him. And I don't think we're going to have the money to pay for him if we don't make the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to hope that this is what's going through his mind, that I know what I'm getting here at West Ham. I know what I'm getting under David Moyes. I'm settled. I don't have to move out of my apartment that I have now. I'm happy in London, and I want to reward the team that had faith in me and brought me down here when I was completely out of confidence and out of favor with every manager that he...
No.
That's what you have to hope for.
Listen, money talks, and you would also is the P's, you know. So I think that he's going to get paid. I think he deserves to get paid, and I think that it's going to come down to either A, us being able to pay for him, which again, like I said, I don't believe is going to happen if we don't make Champions League, and B, also the ambition of being able to keep Rice, you know, big teams sniffing around there. I think it's also going to be the ambition of us bringing in more support and that class striker. You know, we can't do a whole nother season on, I love the guy, he's been incredible, but we can't do a season of just Antonio and our academy guys and Albiona Yeti, you know what I mean, like, or like an equivalent. Obviously I know he's not with us, he's at Celtic, but the point is we're going to have to invest in some class players.
I think, and I do think they will, and if the owners don't, then that's really when you start to voice your opinions loudly back towards the owners, because this is what they said was going to happen. They were what they plan on happening. And if you get there, you get to that promised land, you get to the Champions League, and then you still don't invest. I mean, that would be the ultimate Gold Sullivan and Brady thing to happen. And that's when you, I almost said riot. I don't want to say that. But that's when you bring back all of your demonstrations and that sort of thing. I fully agree.
Well, they are going to get a big check even if they don't make the Champions League. It's just we Europa make top League. Five. Even with the Europa League, and I know that might not bring in as much money from the actual being in that competition, but finishing sixth compared to finishing 15th is 10 places, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that $2 million a place or something like that?
I think it roughly equates to that. It's a little bit more than two. It's 2 point something a spot, I believe it averages out to.
All right, whatever. So let's just say it's two something a spot if our math is correct and we actually understand the rules and blah, 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 times 10, which would be the 10 positions from 15th to 5th. Yeah. There's $20 million extra dollars in the budget.
Yeah.
Or in profit. So they right there will have more money than they anticipated, even with these Champions League bonuses or whatever the fuck that might
And
be.
I do think the owners are going to invest. I think Moyes is going to force them to invest. They're not going to have a choice. I mean, he's going to, I think you got to give him the keys to the car. I'm not saying give him an unlimited budget, but I mean, if you make the Champions League and you don't spend more than 60 to 80 million pounds just in squad depth, I mean, I think you're going to be destined to fail.
Part of the scary thing about investment is, and I've repeated this on the pod a few times though, is like, I know this is not what people want to hear, but they have invested here or whatever, but like they have invested a fair amount of money or at least turned money back in from transfers. But my issue is not even their investment in how much they put in. My issue with them is how poor the investment is.
And buying players based off of their agents and not scouting them.
Right. So my issue is how they do their business. I wouldn't say like they haven't invested. They put in a lot of money on like Alaire being 45 and Felipe being 40. But right there, you've just binned off two players that you've just wasted like 80 million pounds. Like
Yeah.
that frustrates me more than their lack of investment. I'm more upset that they spent a lot of money and didn't get anything out of it. Like look at other clubs who spend 15 and then sell players for 30 or 40, take that 40, get two more players, find good finds, and then flip both of those. Like, look at Leicester. Leicester's buying and flipping players all the time for double their value. That's how, and then now they have all this extra money. Then they built that beautiful training facility.
Yeah.
Like, that's a properly run club where they didn't invest that much of their own money. They're flipping players. Of like their Conte money, their Chilwell
Chill
money.
well, drink water.
I mean, we're talking about players that they came in, they flipped them for X amount, and then they didn't even need to spend their own money. They didn't even have to be like, "Oh, we're broke," because that's what our owners are doing. They're like, "Oh, we don't have any money because of COVID." Blah 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 blah. Well, if you properly invested the first time, we wouldn't be selling our players for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
And that's where I guess that's where my frustration is. So back into the squad investment for the summer. Not only do I want to see, in my personal opinion, not only do I want to see them invest in a Champions League squad or a Europa League squad, what I want to see is smart investments to move forward. I don't want to see another Alaire get 40 million and then you just like. I don't know if they didn't scout, if he didn't fit the system, like why that didn't work out, but they need to investigate that too. Like if I dropped, sorry, I'm rambling, but I just got one more thought here. If I'm Gold and Sullivan, I'm gonna fire whoever talked me into buying those two players in Felipe and Haller. I'm gonna
That
say,
was Pellegrini and Husios is exactly who that was.
okay. Well then, and then I'm gonna figure out why that happened and why I bought off on that,
Yeah,
because I'm
those were the guys
because
that manager wanted, and that's who they went and got them. So I don't think the board are to blame on those guys exactly because that was the former football the director of football and the former manager who are both gone now. And
well then I'd
maybe
argue that those were bad hires too. Then I
Well,
guess
they
what I'm
were.
saying is,
Obviously, they
well,
were.
right, they obviously were. I guess what I'm arguing and going in a circle here is if I had that much money in my life, which I obviously don't, and we always joke about, well, it's not our money, we should just spend whatever. But if I had that much money and the amount of money that that board wastes on player signings, it's crazy. It's genuinely crazy. It's sickening.
And hopefully, those days are behind us now. Hopefully, with Moyes at the helm, we're going to employ some decent scouts. I mean, you see Moyes going to all these games too. Like last night he was at the, I believe it was the Brighton Everton game he was
Yeah.
at. And you see him, but I think we still only have one full-time scout at the club, which is criminal, which is downright criminal. I think that's something that Moyes is trying to change. But I think now there should not be any more just Sullivan signings. It's you give David Moyes who he wants. And if you can't get the first guy on his list, you go get the second guy on his list. If you can't get the second guy, you go get the third, and you go down the list until you get the guys that he has on his list. I think the reason Allaire did not work is because under Pellegrini, Allaire was actually pretty good, and he still scored a few goals under Moyes, but that system that Moyes plays, that high tempo, that high energy, it just doesn't suit him. He
that just run around shit.
Physically, it looks like it should suit him perfectly. Like this big 6'4 striker should be able to hold the ball up, should be able to play physically. He doesn't do that. He plays like he's like 5'9", except for he can hit a bicycle kick out of nothing because he's got those long legs that he can just reach up 10 feet in the sky. And that to me is why Allaire didn't work. The system just didn't suit him. And I don't think he had the desire and the work rate to really fit in. But you're right. I mean, a £20 million loss in one season is a terrible, terrible return on investment. But I think they saw that they weren't going to get any more than that from anywhere else, and they just decided to sell it. I was just shocked that Moyes and or the owners didn't want to bring anyone in. But you can see it's kind of paying off with the fact that we're scoring 3 goals a game. So did we really need to bring anyone in? We'll see come the end of the season, because we're about to find out what this team's really made of with all these injuries coming down the stretch here.
Well, I'm upset we didn't bring anybody in, but I'm also minorly relieved. And the reason I say that is because we didn't bring anyone in, I'm going to do a positive spin on this, okay? I'm going to try and do it to whip this around instead of a negative GSB, because, like, fuck them. But I'm going to try to take a positive here, okay? Ready? Maybe we didn't bring somebody in because we didn't like anything that was available.
Yeah, probably
and,
so.
And rather than wasting money on something that we didn't want, we just got nothing and hope that that pays off. And I guess that for me is a positive, that we didn't waste £20 million on someone who sucks, or somebody that we wouldn't fit a system, or somebody we didn't want, then save that money for the summer. That's what I'm praying.
Yeah, the January window is very volatile. I mean, I agree. And if Moyes and truly didn't think anything was available for the right price, then I have to trust his views on that. I mean, I'm hoping
that's the case. I mean, that could not be the case. They could say, well, there's no money, you can't spend. But I'm hoping it's the former that we said, where it's like, oh, there's nothing available that we want to buy. That's what I'm praying is the truth.
Yeah. So to kind of go back to the Leicester game, I wanted to bring up something that you and I disagreed on the last podcast, was that you said you did not want to see Mark Noble playing for West Ham anymore, and he has put in two really good performances, which is the exact scenario that I said I wanted to see him back in, was it not?
You did. I just didn't think it was possible. Respectfully, I love Mark Noble. It's a non-disrespectful shot at him. Like, it definitely like came at him a little bit, but that's my guy. Like, I love him as a person. I just didn't think he was capable of these two performances, if I'm being honest, and he proved me wrong. I just didn't think it was possible. That's why I didn't want to see it.
And the reason I did want to see it is because he's been played out of position every time he comes alongside Rice and Suchek. And I said, if one of those two guys gets injured, he is the perfect guy to come in and do, because that's his spot. He knows what to do. He knows, I mean, he could play that game blindfolded, and he's going to know where the ball's at. He needs to be in this spot. You know what I mean? I mean, he is just...
I mean, some of his blocks were immense.
Incredible. Yeah.
So, no, I eat my words. I didn't think it was possible.
He covered more ground than Wilfred Ndidi last game. He covered more ground than Ndidi. That's insane.
Yeah, he's played out of his mind, and I'm glad to be proven wrong. Like, that's the other thing about having, like, bad takes when it comes to, like, not that I don't want a player to do well, but I'm like, oh, I don't think this is going to be possible. Please prove me wrong, because that means you played well and the team played well. Like, if you're ever like, oh, I don't think we're going to win, and then you look like an asshole for being wrong, well, I'm glad I'm wrong. I'm 100% glad I'm wrong that he played well, you know?
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure I brought that up, just to, because this is one of those rare situations where I'm right, because that usually doesn't happen on this podcast.
He has been a servant to this club, and I'm very thankful that he stepped up in Rice's absence and played extremely well. So all I can say is I ate my words, and I'm very thankful.
And this is the guy that predicted Jack Wilshere to finish Hammer of the Year last season, me. So yeah, I'm glad.
Oh,
to be,
I was gonna say,
I'm
I
glad
think
to be
I
right.
Did that.
No, I did. I said.
I know. I was like, I thought you were saying I said that. I was like, mother, no, I did not. No, you said that. I don't remember you saying that though either. So you could have kept going to yourself.
No, I did. I mean, I think it's hilarious. I mean, that's the wild, wild west of you know, when you get your own podcast, you can set this microphone in front of your face and say whatever you want. That's one of those situations where, like, you look back on it, you're like, what the hell was I thinking saying these words that just came out of my mouth? It's just one of those scenarios. But anyway.
I'd say so. Everybody's got a fucking podcast nowadays. We got about 45 West Ham podcasts. So if you still listen to us, thanks, I guess. If you give us a shot in our once a month, or we're going to try and do better, but you know, it's just, it's crazy. Everybody thinks they can do a podcast. So all I can say is thank you if you still listen to us.
No, for sure. I want to echo that. Yeah. If you are still listening to us, thank you so much for tuning in every time we put out a show. Cause we really do appreciate it. And it's something that we enjoy doing. And you're right there. There's the West Ham content world. On the podcast scene specifically, it's just exploded over the 2 years, and the market is very, very, very saturated with content and podcasts right now. And if you're still listening to us, we just want to say thank you for that. We really appreciate it.
We are the American podcast trailblazers.
Yeah, we.
I would like to.
I will
like
say we
ask,
are the original. Yep. We're not taking.
There wasn't any other ones.
No, that's the only reason why we. That's the only reason why we did it, is because we said there wasn't another one.
Right. Because so if I could mini timeline, I know there was an American guy on. Oh God, I feel so terrible now. It's blanking me. There's an American guy on more than just a podcast. Occasionally, like once a year.
Okay. Let's just move on and go ahead to my personal favorite part of the podcast, is where we get to answer the questions from Twitter. Tony, I think you have them pulled up in front of you. I don't. Well, you want to go ahead and start with the first one?
Yeah, I want to go track back a tiny bit, because some people did respond from our one for last week, and then we didn't end up doing a podcast because we got busy. So I just want to run through a few of those comments there. The first one's from Minneapolis Hammers. The whole thing is hard to process. Feels like we're both crashing and burning while pushing up at the table at the same time. I don't want this season to end, but match week 38 can't come soon enough. And I wanted to comment on that and just say it's crazy how some of these performances in the last 3 weeks, our 3-0 ups, have been so roller coaster, where, you know, we're feeling sky high, like, wow, we're really doing this. This is crazy. And then next thing you know, we're shaking on the edge of our seat in the 90th minute. So I definitely feel that. And then Eric Hedrinus responded, said, I agree. It just does make for some dramatic games, and I'm okay with us winning ugly so as long as we win, but I might need to get my blood pressure meds after the last week. So how do you feel about the way we're going about this?
I mean, I echo everything they just said. It feels like we get these 3-goal leads and we're almost not wanting to score a third goal, because We're pretty confident at 2-0, but you give us that third goal and it's the worst lead in soccer all of a sudden. I couldn't agree more. My heart has probably aged about 15 years in these past three games. It's, I think my Apple Watch. I actually, by the way, I got to go to watch this Leicester game on Sunday at the Amsterdam Tavern with like a bunch of other people. It was really nice. I'm fully vaccinated. I got my second Pfizer vaccine, so I'm fully vaxxed. I got to see people I haven't seen in years up there. It was really good to get to go and watch a game in public and see us win, which I usually doesn't happen when I go watch us at the bar. So it was really, really good. But as I was standing there during like the 70th and 80th minute, and then when they scored that late one, my Apple Watch said my pulse was, it says, we don't think you're working out, but your pulse rate is exceeding blah, 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 and you should probably go to the hospital. And it's like, yeah, that's what West Ham is doing to me right now. It's crazy that we keep doing this at 3-0 up. But like I said before, if it takes us going 3 goals up to win 3-2 and get 3 points, then I am all for it. But like I said earlier also, when Ogbonna comes back, hopefully we'll get the 3-0 lead and then hang on to the 3-0 lead is what I'm really hoping for.
Absolutely. Double vax squad over here, too. Got that Pfizer second shot a few weeks ago. So one more week of incubation, and then I'm all out.
About a week ago.
Yep, and then we have Ian Ciceri says, evening, chaps, assuming we get into either Europa competition, either European competition, excuse me, do you think we could build a squad over the summer equipped for such an adventure? I do want to comment on this one as well. I hope we do. I think we can. I think we will have the money there being this high up in the table. And I think the owners owe it to the current squad as well to do that. They've earned every minute and every point that we have done this season to get into this position. And so is David Moyes. So credit to him. As many times a season, I've been a Moyes hater. And frankly, I'm still skeptical, which, you know, I'm going to get slept for. But he's earned it. And he has earned these players have earned the respect to enhance the squad and push on even further. And if these guys can do it now, imagine what a few improvements could do and see where we go from there.
Yeah, I agree. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but yeah, I think we will invest. I think the owners are I'm hoping that they give the keys to Moyes and just hand over the reins to him and let him buy as he pleases and they sign off on the checks. Again, I'm not saying an unlimited fund, but within a reasonable amount, you do whatever it takes to get the guys that he wants. And what will be nice, if we do finish in a European spot, especially a Champions League place, I think you're going to have players that actually want to leave where they're at and come to West Ham, which will be nice for a change. Because usually, the only way we attract these kind of players is if we, A, pay them way more than what they would get paid anywhere else, or B, they're not getting playing time at the clubs that are bigger than us and they want a step down so they can play every week. I mean, that's really the only way you're attracting big players to your team is by one of those two options. And I think if you get Europa League, that's an incentive to most players, but definitely if you get the Champions League, you're going to have players knocking down the door wanting to come play for David Moyes and West Ham United, which will be a totally new thing for us.
Because I didn't even think of it like that. Not even just the financial implications, but like people for recruitment purposes, people wanting to play in the European competitions. I want to combine Dave Speary and Tony Hatcher's two comments, so I'll read Dave's first. Love the win. This is after Wolves, reminder, folks. Love the win, but worried about the depth of Lingard and Antonio if they're out. Love the instant pod though, boys. Oh, man, we didn't do his instant pod, though. But we're going to read off your comment anyway, Dave. And then the other one's from Tony Hatcher. Let's hope Jay Ling's is okay. He was class going forward. Great to see King Arthur and Fornals contribute in their first match back. Yeah, so the reason I wanted to combine those two is because that was after the Wolves games when Lingard got a little knock at the end, which we obviously have seen in the Leicester performance. He has came back and performed exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think he came down with a bit of cramp at the end of the game, which is totally believable for the amount of distance he covered. I think for the Wolves game, he covered more distance than anyone else on the pitch. So if he was cramping up at the end of the game, I totally believe it. Now, it looked like whoever the Wolves player was not too happy with him going down with cramp. But especially at the end of the game when they got kind of heated and the little huddle started to take place, and it was just a bit of handbags, it seemed like. But, yeah, it's just good to see him be okay and come into the Leicester game and score an absolute beauty of a goal. I mean, normally we go into more detail during the game itself, but we kind of danced around that this time because you get a lot of that on other podcasts anyway. So
we just want to chat.
Just a general discussion, I think, is more the direction we're going. But talk about an incredible finish. I mean, the angle on the volley, I could not believe Lingard scored that goal from where he did and gave Schmeichel no chance. His first one I'm talking about. Second one,
he just looked at it.
The second one I probably could have scored in the same position. I would hope I would score that in the same position. But who knows? I'd probably blaze it about into the third row of the London Stadium.
Like Antonio. But I can't even say that anymore because Antonio is lighting it up this season. I want to say thanks to Irons and Stripes and Dan Roberts and Sam Boss and a few other people who did tweet after the Wolves game. But I want to read one more from the Wolves game. It was from West Ham Yank. Let me be the first to say how much of a low-key idiot I was. I look when for what I thought about the Lingard loan. Boy, am I eating my words and with how he's playing. And I just wanted to make sure I read that one off because I was not the only one. And I completely agree with him. I was in the same boat. Lingard's making me look like a fool, and I'm very glad he is.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I won't say I was, like, enamored with him. I didn't think it was going to be really anything spectacular when we signed him. I didn't not want him. It just didn't make sense to me why we would want him. But clearly, Moyes knows much more about his teams than we do, and that's why he brought him in, and that's why he's here, and that's why he's going to be going to the Euros, and he's in the discussion, at least, for Hammer of the Year, even though he's only been here since January. I'm not saying he's deserving of it or will win it, but I think he's in the top three at worst, especially with Rice going down injured now and Ogbonna going down injured, and Dawson came in around January time too, a little bit before that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, he's got to be right up there.
Yeah, and yeah, you weren't as negative as I was. I was pretty negative on that. I don't dislike the guy personally. I mean, I really like him, but I didn't think that he was a necessary addition to the team. And
I didn't here love we it. Are. I didn't love his shtick either, like the social media jailings.
Oh, I do.
Like I was, but like most people. Like hate that guy when he's not on your team, but then when he gets on your team, you love him. It's like an enforcer in hockey, like a Steve Ott or a Ryan Reeves or a
Eric Ashum.
Yeah, or a
Aaron
Sean Avery is like the classic example of it. I mean, it's like you hate those guys when they're terrorizing your team, and then they're doing all the showboating and gloating, but then all of a sudden they're on your team and you love it. Like I hated that the Jaylings thing, and here I am wearing a t-shirt with Jaylings doing the Jaylings celebration in a West Ham shirt. I mean, I know you guys can't see my shirt listening in your cars or at home, but
this is a great audio medium.
I've got a t-shirt on that I had printed with Jesse Lingard's face doing the Jaylings celebration just because I love the guy so much now. And I would have never, if you would have told me last year that I'd be sitting here with Jesse Lingard's face on a t-shirt, I would have just laughed in your face. But another crazy stat is, I mean, I think he's played 10 games for us. He now has 8 goals and 3 assists, which I think our top scorer last year finished with 10 or 11 in Antonio, and 4 of those coming in one game. Again, I'm sorry if I'm pulling those stats out of midair and they're incorrect, but you guys should know by now we're not professional podcasters and we don't do that much research. But 8 goals, when normally our top scorer has 10, is pretty remarkable.
We're lucky to get double digits.
Yeah, no, I mean, we usually don't.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sad. The other thing I wanted to say about Jaylings, though, is because you said, what would you be saying if you were wearing a Jaylings shirt in the previous year? And I want to know what you would be doing if I told you you'd be wearing a Jaylings shirt and we were sitting 4th in April.
Yeah, I just flat out would have thought you were high and asked what drug you were on and then asked if I could partake in that drug with you, because that's how crazy that the question you are asking me is. I mean, no one saw this coming. No one.
Nobody did.
If I just wish I would have put $5 on West Ham to finish in a Champions League spot this year, because I'd probably be making
$500.
Yeah, I mean, probably more than that. I mean,
it would not be 1,000 to 1.
I bet it wouldn't be far off of that. West Ham United, after finishing 16th last year to finish in the Champions League with David Moyes, I would like to see what the price was on that at the beginning of the season. But you'd be making a hell of a lot of money, and they would be begging you to cash that out right now for half.
Yeah, I probably would. I would just take that money and run. Okay, do you want to hit us with the two we got tonight and finish up the podcast?
Yeah, not Ryan at Amish Goat Farm says, would you take Harry Kane in the summer? I just can't get with Spurs cast-offs. And then he goes on to say, he's kidding, obviously, but serious business. Next to signing Lingard, what do you think the biggest area of need this summer is? Striker, defensive midfielder, center back or left back depth. So, I mean, what would you say our strongest area of needing to be addressed is?
Well, I want to address the Harry Kane thing real quick first. So I thought this was a joke. You did tell me that it was a reputable source, but it was a tongue-in-cheek comment, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, it's from The Standard, which, again, I don't know.
Well, reputable enough, I guess.
They're a legit journalism output, whatever you want to call them.
Well, there's
them.
No legit journalism in the UK. But
yeah, but they're one of the big boys.
More legit than it gets, than nothing. But, yeah, I thought it was a joke. And think about it, though. We'll be playing Champions League, potentially, if we make it. And Spurs is below us. Which they could always jump us, but the point is, yeah, that's just crazy. So, but areas of improvement, obviously, at least two strikers are necessary, one for depth and one starter. I don't think Antonio is a starter next year, personally, but at the same time, maybe he starts as a starter until someone is phased in. But who knows if he holds up for injuries? And if we do make Europe, that's automatically six more games and two domestic cups. Let's say we at least do the first round. There's two more. So there's at least eight more additional games over the 38. So there'll be plenty of game time to go around. I think striker, and I think the defense. I think we're going to need another center back, and I think we're going to need an outside left back. I think Fredericks is fine to back up Sofal. And I would say I was talking about this with, in another group chat, I think we need another center mid as well who can play in and out like we talked about, I think, on the podcast last week, where I'm missing Obiang or Fernandez. People didn't rate Fernandez. I did.
I did not.
I know you didn't. I did. And I liked him enough that
I thought he was too young and too raw, I should say. I did not rate him. I just didn't think he added anything really to us.
Yeah, but then I think at the same time, I would have liked to see him keep going then. But either way, a Fernandez and Obiang, someone who can play as a rotation one in every three games. And like I said, since you'll have eight additional games on top of the 38, you're talking about 46 now, and not including any injuries. So I think we're going to need at least one at a lot of positions, and I think striker's going to need at least two.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. By the way, I just want to circle back the Standard article that you're referring to. It just basically had a headline that said Harry Kane could join Chelsea or West Ham, in quotes, in search for Champions League football, claims Ginola, which I believe they're referring to David Ginola, who played for Spurs, the Spurs striker in the past, who was a terrific player, I might add. I'm a big admirer of David Ginola. But if I had to guess, it's a quote that was taken way out of context and kind of tongue-in-cheek, but The Standard published it, and I'm sure it was clickbait for a lot of people, but because there is no way on God's green earth that Harry Kane leaves Tottenham Hotspur to join West Ham. I'm sorry. I would love it. I would love it. I hate Harry Kane when he's playing for Tottenham. He's played for Millwall. He's played for Leighton Orient. I cannot see it happening at all, but I would love
that'd
him.
Be something. Though.
I would love him. He's one of the top three strikers in the world, I would argue, right now in terms of form. And I think you would be spending well over $110 million, probably more than that, to get Harry Kane on your team. And even if we spent that, there's no freaking way that Harry Kane's coming to West Ham. So okay. just throwing that out there. The next thing that we have on our list here. Oh, and I guess I should answer the question. In terms of positions, I echo pretty much everything you just said. The strikers would be my number one priority. Find a guy. Find David Moyes' guy. Find the closest thing you can get to Mikel Antonio. Find the closest thing you can get to that, which in my opinion is Adama Traore. If that's possible, I would say go get him and then go get another striker. Maybe someone to switch things up. Maybe something a little different. But I would say go find your guy. David Moyes, go find your guy that you want. I'm going to go get him. That's what we need. And if I had to take a stab at David Moyes-esque guys that, like, aren't strikers but, like, could be, like an Arnautovic and Antonio, again, one of them would be Traore. Whether or not you can get him, my guess is probably not. But if we're playing in the Champions League, hey, Traore might want to come play for you. I know he hasn't been that in form lately, but he looked great against us, and he's one of my favorite players. And then another guy who's similar – probably not as strong, but I would say Alan Saint-Maximin at Newcastle is a guy that everyone is
I
like
like him.
Rubbing their hands, hoping Newcastle get relegated and hoping that you could pick him. His sights might be set a little higher than West Ham, I would say. He's probably looking at a bigger club, but who knows. But striker, obviously, is number one. I think my number two position would be I want another central midfielder.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a spot where we really need cover. Suchek and Rice cannot keep up with the rate that they've been going. Obviously, Rice just got injured. But I don't think Rice and Suchek can continue playing 90 minutes week in, week out in the Champions League and or Europa League and or FA Cup and or League Cup and or Premier League. You know what I mean? I just don't think that's feasible. So you would need to have a good rotation of four guys. So Noble's your third guy. Go get a fourth guy who hopefully will become the third guy.
And a fifth guy because you're really going to, one of them get injured, you're still going to need to rotate four.
Yeah,
between 46 games.
I don't think we can go crazy with buying all these players and expect it to be a settled, solid, good team. I mean, we have to,
fair.
I think we have to keep a good, because David Moyes is right. Having this small group really has brought everyone close, and I don't think there's that many people who are livid with playing time. I think if I had to make a guess of the list, I would say Balbuena is probably the most pissed off out of anyone because he's been playing very little. And then I would say Lanzini, well, but probably maybe even Benrahma. Benrahma is probably thinking, oh, what do I do now? Do I stay and be a part of the squad? Or because I still love the guy, I think he's gonna.
You stay. You're about to go play in the Champions League, and there's gonna be all this extra game time.
Hopefully,
absolutely, you stay.
You hope that's what he's thinking. But then, and then guys like Lanzini and Yarmolenko's coming back from injury. But when he's fit, I don't want him anywhere near the team. If I'm honest, I would try to get as much money as humanly possible for him and sell him off to where MLS or somewhere where he can go collect a paycheck. Because I think Yarmolenko's our highest paid player. Maybe Lingard coming in is the highest now. But yeah, Yarmolenko, and he's contributed with some big goals, especially last year, but it has not been a great time at West Ham, and injuries have played a lot of part in that. So
can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanna add into this conversation of depth and stuff. I think you know where I might be going with this. I low-key want to see Felipe get another shot. What are your thoughts?
For depth, I would be okay with it. But if it's true about the reports of how poorly and how terrible he's been with Porto and not getting any playing time at all, their Champions League team, and if they don't want him and they're not playing him at all, is he really going to be playing that much for us? I don't know. I would give him a chance in preseason at minimum. If you can't get...
Don't you just find the whole situation weird, though? Like, I thought he had a hella good season
under
Pellegrini.
He did.
And then he just fell off the face of the earth. Like, he was bad.
Yeah, I mean, he...
Like, I just don't understand how that happens. I just don't get it. I thought he had a very good season. I thought he performed well. He's a flashy player. And I know that's not Moyes' system, but surely, like, you don't just forget how to play.
Like, I think it's a confidence thing, and he's never recovered from the shot of confidence. I thought going to Porto would be perfect. I thought that was a perfect place for him to end up, and especially playing in the Champions League. And I wish I wish Porto would have taken down Chelsea, because that's something else that we somewhat have to worry about. If Chelsea end up winning the Champions League, then that puts our spot in jeopardy, I believe. So, I mean, we'll see, but I was really hoping that Anderson at Porto was going to work out better than it did, and it's seems to have been as bad, if not worse, than his time at West Ham this past season. So
true.
But I also want to say I agree with you, center back and outside back. I would say I would want another body in each of those positions for competition.
Literally everything other than winger.
Yeah, wingers and attacking midfielders, I think we're about set. Yep.
Yeah. All right.
The last question we have here is from Dan Roberts, and he says, it's pretty much the same question. He's, where do we need depth for our European tour? And he screenshotted a tweet that said, This team is obviously good enough to finish mid-table. Who is one player that you could believe that could push us to fighting for a European spot? And he said, obviously, that answer is now Lingard, which is true. One thing I do want to say, which is kind of a side note here, media outlets are acting like Jesse Lingard is the only reason we're challenging for Champions League. Mm-hmm. And we were fifth or sixth, if not higher, when Jesse Lingard came into this team. Certainly helped, but you can't say if Lingard wasn't there, would they be sitting in fourth fighting for Champions League? I heard that on Talk Sport, and then the guy said, yeah, I don't think they would be. It's like, well, show us a little bit of respect. We were playing really well without Jesse Lingard also. Let's not forget that. Jesse Lingard is not the sole reason that we are fighting for Champions League. Has his 8 goals and 3 assists been massive to us? Absolutely. It's been
to keep us there keep us up there? Yeah.
It's been terrific, but we were playing just fine without him. So the disrespect that this squad and David Moyes have gotten for the prior 4 months leading up into the January transfer window, I think is very harsh, and I just wanted to address that. But I don't think we have anything else this week. Other than I want to address, we do have a game coming up Saturday morning against Newcastle, and I just wanted to get your thoughts and prediction.
So 7:30 kickoff Eastern for me. I will be watching in bed. 6:30 for you. Are you going to Amsterdam, or are you watching in bed too with the baby?
So my Newcastle buddies are all like begging me to go to the pub to watch. So I think we'll see. If I'm already awake for a feeding at like 5, then I will more likely just say, screw it, I'm up, I'm going to go. If I'm asleep and the alarm goes off at 6:30, right when the game kicks off, I'm just going to watch it in bed with the baby.
So I think it's time for baby's first away game and for you to take the baby to the pub at 6 o'clock God, in the morning.
Yeah. No one wants that, trust me. Nobody wants that.
I don't think Sammy would appreciate that either, though.
No, literally no one on the face of this earth wants that. And that's probably not true. He would probably be fine at the pub. He might be a little fussy every now and again, but overall, he's a great baby, and blessed. Yeah, no, I know, but we're incredibly blessed with how awesome he's been. But yeah, taking him to the pub at 6 in the morning is not on my things I want to do right now.
New dad, take your baby to the boozer. So back to what I think about the game. I'm a bit concerned how we played them the first time. I know this is a completely different team.
Yeah.
And they're in a different set of form. We're in a different set of form. We're all the way up, and they're fighting for relegation.
Hey, at least Zabaleta can't be playing right back against St. Maximin. At least that won't happen this time.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. They're at 17th. They're about safe, though. But here's what scares me a little bit. I know we're playing well, and I know it's a weird thing to be like, only think about their side of the story. But here's the thing, is a win for them against us most likely will secure promotion. I mean, safety.
And I would say, I would argue and say, you're absolutely right. But I would argue and say right now, they very well could lose out the rest of the games this season and probably be safe. I think the way I was talking to my Newcastle friends, they pretty much think that also. But you're right, a win would seal the deal for certain.
Right, and especially because they do play Sheffield in both Sheffield and Fulham at the last two games. Like, I think that they're fine, but a win against us could seal it. However, you could use that same reverse psychology for us and say, look,
yep,
a win for us would put us on 58, take us above Leicester, and we go third. So I don't know what to predict. I'm too scared. I don't even like doing predictions. I'm a bit worried. I'm a bit worried, to be honest with you, but we've taken care of business. If I look back here, we beat Leicester, we beat Wolves, we beat Leeds, we beat Spurs, and we beat Sheffield. The last game that we dropped points on a game that I thought that we should have won was Fulham 0-0. And then before that, the last time we dropped points on a game that I thought we should have won was Southampton and Brighton in December.
Are you going back before the Arsenal game that we just blew a 3-0 lead in?
Yes, because I didn't expect us to beat Arsenal.
Oh, gotcha. I see. Okay.
So I'm talking about games that I expect us to win The last time we dropped points was the Fulham game in February, and before that, the Southampton in September. So, in December. So, in reality, we really should get a result and make things happen. So, I'm pretty excited, and I think we can do the business. Especially because, I mean, it is in Newcastle, but I think we can make it happen.
So, you don't want to do a score. You think we win?
I do think we win. I don't like predicting that. Not that I believe that I have any influence whatsoever. I'm not used to being confident. I think that we have a better side, and I think we can beat Newcastle. I will say that. I'm just scared. I'm very nervous the rest of the season because I'm excited. It's an excited nervous.
The one thing that worries me about Newcastle, I should say the two things, is that Callum Wilson just came back and Saint-Maximin just came back. If you take those two guys out of Newcastle, they are a championship at best side. I mean, there's not one player, and maybe that's me being harsh and not really thinking about it, there's not really one player that I am like dying to have from Newcastle if you take Callum Wilson and Saint-Maximin out of that team. Maybe Lascelles, but he's injury prone. It's like their team is just, and maybe Shelvey for depth. I would probably take Shelvey. But outside of that, that's about it. They're a bang average team without Saint-Maximin and Wilson. And that was they both got subbed on at halftime, I think, in their most recent game against Burnley. He's always hurt too. He's just a pace merchant, I think. He really, that's all he has is pace.
We like pace over here.
We do. I'm not denying that, but he's very one-dimensional.
Yeah, but they both, Andy Carroll, but yeah, they both, I get what you're saying.
They both came on at halftime down 1-0, and they end up beating Burnley 2-1 with them contributing to both the goals. And Saint-Maximin had a terrific solo goal. So those two are what worried me about Newcastle. Having said that, I think we beat them. If Ogbonna comes back, really huge bonus. I'm going to go 2-0 West Ham. We get a clean sheet, and it would play really well. As long as we don't go three, if we go 3-0 up, then all bets are off.
Yeah, who knows at this point. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I think we can do the business, and I think it's a great opportunity for us to keep this train rolling. And I think if we get a result, I know it sounds crazy. I think if we get a result, it really shows the intention. I think about how many times last season or in seasons before where we were pushing on. And I was like, chance to go fourth or chance to go fifth, and we just blew it. This season, we keep saying we're waiting for this drop-off, and we haven't seen it. So I'm really hoping that they can keep showing this intent and this passion and this love. Liam said it perfectly. I forgot to shout this out earlier. You know, the squad morale, the squad, the way that they're intertwined together and they all seem to enjoy each other's company, the way that they play together, the chemistry. It's exciting what we got going on.
For sure. I totally agree. The only thing that I just wish is, can you imagine the away day to Newcastle? The weather is getting nice. We're fighting for a Champions League place. The only thing that would suck is that you're up in the heavens at Newcastle. But that the train journey up, the car rides up with your mates, and that atmosphere would just be absolutely bouncing when a day on the booze. Well, it's an early kickoff, so that would suck. But
yeah, good luck getting a ticket.
I just think it would. I miss the fans, and that can't be understated. I really, really hate all these games without fans, and it's done us. It's done us some good, but I just miss the fans, and hopefully before the end of the season, fans will be back because I think football is a 10 million times better product when fans are in the stadium.
Well, on that note, because I don't want to hear you rant about fans because it's out of your control, do you want to take us out on this part that we can't, that I always mess up? And I even messed up my own little transition.
You can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe. And if you guys would please go leave us a 5-star rating and write us a nice little review on iTunes, we would certainly appreciate it. And besides that,
DM us some thoughts as well on things on some feedback. Like, I just love when people interact with us, whether it's positive or negative. It really helps us keep going, because we obviously, I do want to add one thing. Like, we don't get paid for this. We just enjoy doing it. It's fun. It's, I get to hang out with one of my best buddies, Brawley. So that's the reason we keep doing this, and it's for people. Even if we have 10 people listen, we really enjoy and thank those 10 people. So if you could hit us a DM, and it really helps us keep moving forward when you guys tell us how much you enjoy it, or even if you hate it. I do like the feedback and hear people pretty much saying that they listened.
So. Yeah, if we've gone a week or two without a podcast and you're getting annoyed and you want us to put out just start twisting our arm on Twitter, say, hey, when's the next one coming out? And that'll probably get our butts into a little bit higher gear to make it more of a priority to sit down and record. Because, I mean, I will say my life is insane right now with work.
Yeah, you're telling me.
With work and a new kid. But if we get our arms twisted enough, we'll probably find the – even if it's just a short 20, 30-minute pod – we can try to bang one out. But yeah, we definitely appreciate all you guys sticking with us, listening to these shows, and hopefully you're enjoying them as much as we are doing them. But I think that does it for this week. We're signing off, hopefully coming back after the Newcastle game with 3 more points in the bag and us still fighting for that Champions League place in 4th spot. And maybe, who knows, if we do beat Newcastle, that's before Leicester play, we do go 3rd. At least temporarily, we will be in 3rd place if we beat Newcastle. So,
Jesus,
it's just mind blowing to think about. But that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
All right.